Amen. Well, turn to John chapter 8. The title of this message this morning is Come On You Blues. Come On You Blues. Okay, John chapter 8, starting at verse 31. We're just reading a couple of verses to begin with. Okay, these are the words of Jesus. Jesus said to the Jews, to the Jews who had believed in him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It's the truth that sets us free, and there is absolute truth. And we know that Jesus later on said, I am the truth, I am the way, I am the life. So hopefully, I hope we can hear Jesus in some difficult circumstances that the world finds itself in at the moment. I won't be able to give you all the answers to the problems today, but maybe a little bit of truth will give us a modicum of freedom in our own lives, but also it might give freedom to others who we deal with too. So, as I said already, come on you blues. If I were to cheer, come on you blues, what would other people want to cheer back? Particularly those that are living in Liverpool, I guess. Yeah, you might hear other people saying, no, come on you Reds, come on you Reds. So for some, this might start a friendly discussion if I start talking about the Blues, particularly if I meet someone from the Reds. And it might start to actually cause a heated debate. And when I was in the police, it used to cause fights as well. And I remember when I was in Crystal Palace, and I was in charge of a team in Thornton Heath, and we had Brighton and Hove. Is it Brighton and Hove or someone? You can tell I don't watch football much, but Brighton and Hove were coming to play Crystal Palace. Now, apparently they don't get on. And our job as the Safe Neighbourhood team was actually to get all the shops to close early so that the Brighton fans did not smash the place up, which allegedly they were thinking of doing. Thankfully, they didn't. But it can cause rivalry, can't it? If we put people into teams or categories, it can be a catalyst for rivalry. And the rivalry might start as friendly, but because of our fallen nature, our nature always tends to want to be the best or the first or preferred. And it can get ugly when we try and be the best or we try and be the preferred one. And according to the Bible, who committed the first murder because of rivalry? It was rivalry that the first murder was committed. And that's in Genesis 4. You don't have to turn there, but we know that Cain killed his brother Abel. Why? Why did Cain kill Abel? Well, because God accepted his brother's offering, but not his. His brother had seemingly done better than he. His brother's offering was different because it was an animal offering, whereas Cain's offering was some vegetables or some of the crops. Perhaps his brother's offering was different too because his brother had a different attitude about it. We don't really know, but his brother's was different. And therefore, I think Cain saw his brother as different. But what we do know is that God spoke to Cain and told him that he needn't be angry. And he too could be accepted if he did the right thing. But if he did not, God said to Cain, sin is crouching at his door and desiring to have him. And we know from the same experiences, don't we? Having the same feelings as Cain, that sin does not crouch silently when it does it. Sin is not passive or patient. It wants us, and it will make its voice heard loudly in our flesh. When sin crouches at our door wanting to have us, it doesn't just wait patiently for us. It antagonizes us. It beckons us. Sin's voice in our flesh can be loud and aggressive, whereas the Holy Spirit's voice in our spirit is still, small and gentle. Sin's voice appeals to our selfish desires and the paths of least resistance. It knows how to press our buttons, doesn't it? So right there, listening to God and listening to sin in his flesh, Cain has the choice. He can either go with his fallen nature that was burning with anger and feelings of inferiority towards his brother and the need to settle the score, to get one up on his brother, believing the lie that in order to feel better about myself, I need to bring my brother down. That's the lie we often believe, isn't it? Have you ever believed that lie? In order to feel better about myself, someone else needs to be worse than me, or someone else needs to do a bit, little bit less than me, and then I don't feel so bad. Or he had the choice, he could pursue righteousness with God. But if he didn't, if he did that, he'd have to entrust his identity and his security to God and not compare himself to his brother. He had the choice, I fix this, I fix my brother, or I leave it to God and leave my brother alone. So what did Cain choose? He chose not to let go of his anger and do the right thing. Instead, blinded by rivalry, Cain murdered his brother. Now, rivalry is a lie. Rivalry says that I have to be as good as, if not better, than the other. And the same battle still rages in our flesh today, the need to appear better than our rivals. After all, that's what the world teaches, isn't it, right? Survival of the fittest and the cleverest, evolution, and the winner is the best. That's the lie the world has swallowed from the enemy. Instead of letting our identity, our security and acceptance come from God, the enemy, through sin, still crouching at everyone's door, desires to have people and tells them the way to make things right, in speech marks, or have success is to be over others. How often do you hear that lie in your head? You're not good enough until you're better than someone else. Do you often hear that lie in your head? Even if you don't believe it, do you hear it? That I'll feel better if I'm better than someone else. Well, fast forward from Cain, some 5,000 years, and this rivalry, this lie of rivalry, is still prevalent. Fast forward to 2020, and you need no look further than the news or in the streets in our cities all over the world. Black Lives Matter. All over the world right now, banners saying Black Lives Matter. Now, to be honest, I'm not sure if I know any black people. And in the same vein, I'm not sure if I know any white people either. The color of this paper that I'm reading from is white. Do you know anyone who is white? A little girl, one little girl that Marie looks after, loves drawing princesses. She can draw princesses all day if you let her. And before she draws a princess, she decides, and then she declares to everyone that she's going to draw a princess with peach skin, or she's going to draw a princess with brown skin. The term black and white is not in her mind yet. Marie was trying to find out the name of a little girl in her class, and she asked about the girl with red hair. This really confused Marie's little one, because in her mind, there was definitely no one in her class with red hair. Eventually, she twigged and said something like, "Yes, Auntie Marie, there is someone with orange hair in my class." When did orange become red and brown become black and peach become white? My all-time favorite Bible teacher, Keith Moore, said this a few years ago and again more recently. He was asking the Lord about some of the race riots and what were happening in America about 6 years ago. And the fact that after all these years, all these resolutions and laws, why was racism so prevalent still? He felt the Lord say to him, the root of racism is race. Or in other words, you can't get rid of racism if you hold on to race. You'll find the concept of race does not come from God. You won't find race in the original scriptures. Race is a social concept. It's man-made. Black and white do not describe an actual color, but a category. How many shades of color of skin are there? Millions, probably. More than Marie's little one has in felt-tip pens, anyway. Why is our skin and our hair different colors? Why do we have different categories for different skin pigmentation? Do you know why plants are green? It's because of chlorophyll. And we have different pigmentations due to melanin. Melanin is effective at absorbing and dissipating harmful UV radiation. And when it does this, melanogenesis occurs, causing the skin to darken. As the body produces more melanin pigment to cope with the ultraviolet radiation from the sun. So the more ultraviolet radiation, the more pigment, the darker we become to dissipate that radiation to keep us healthy. The pigment also affects the color of our hair and our eyes. Because we know we're all descendants of Adam and Eve, our skin colors and hair types have changed over the centuries, depending on how close we've lived to the equator. So our brothers and sisters whose ancestors lived centuries with much UV radiation, their skin and their hair changed to be much darker. And for those whose ancestors have lived further away from the equator with not much UV radiation, have lighter skin and lighter hair. In reality, this is what racism is based on. If you've reached a certain level of skin pigmentation, you're in a different category of human being. You are a different kind. The truth is that we know that we are no different on the inside. Physically, or our spirits, or our souls, we're the same. The truth is that we're no different. But when people are divided into different races, it gives the impression that we are. If we didn't have categories, would we have a campaign for Black Lives Matter? You can't get rid of racism if we hold on to race. If you cut something down in your garden, but it springs up again in a few months, what does that tell you? The root is still there. We can protest, change laws, remove statues, apologize till the cows come home. But if you keep the categories, you will always have rivalry and sin telling people they need to be over the other to be better. On the news, we often hear white or black officer or white officer or black community. Does it make you a different kind of person because of the tint of your skin or the color of your hair? As long as we cling to categories of race, racism won't go away. The idea of race is based on a lie, things that are not true. Let's see how the word race has slipped into our most modern versions of the Bible. You turn to Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. Genesis chapter 6, verse 5. Now, race is not God's concept. It came along. Man invented race. Let's see how God sees the human people. Now, in your version, it might read something like this, but in my version, I got the 2011 NIV. Now, my NIV Bible is before 2011, but when you go onto the computer or the new Bibles these days, they have the post-2011 version, and this is what it says in the 2011 version. The Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. Now, in modern times, they've slipped the word in race in the Bible, but actually, race does not exist. If you read a more accurate version, you'd actually discover that the original Hebrew word, okay, is the word. I'll read from the King James, the New King James Version this time. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth. So that's the original Hebrew word, is Adam. The Lord saw that the wickedness of Adam, meaning man, was great. However, the new translation has said the wickedness of the human race. So we've invented this word race, and we start to categorize when actually when God looks at people, he doesn't see race or races. He sees Adam. He sees man, the people he created. We may have differences in visual appearance, but why should we divide ourselves and categorize ourselves by looks? And we can see the error creeping into the New Testament too. If you turn to Romans chapter 9, older versions don't have the word race. But the newer 2011 version adds the word race into it, which gives it a completely different spin. Okay, Romans chapter 9, verse 3. Okay. This is Paul speaking. For I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my people, those of my own race. So influenced by modern thinking, this new rendering or translation suggests that the Jewish people are a different race. Paul's own race, when actually that's not what the original wording says. If I read to you from Romans 9:3 in the New King James Version, it says, "For I could wish that I myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my countrymen, according to the flesh." That's a more literal translation. Paul referring to his own flesh and blood, his family, the people who he grew up in. They're not a different race. They are Adam, but they're my Adam. They're the people that I came from. They're my flesh and blood, my family. Okay, so let's see why the enemy would like us to start including this word race, even in our Bibles, but over time, why he's added this word race to categorize ourselves. Turn to Mark 3. Mark chapter 3, verse 25. Sorry, it's starting at verse 23. Mark 3, 23. So Jesus called them over and said to him, called them over to him and began to speak to them in parables. How can Satan drive out Satan? If a kingdom is divided against itself, that kingdom will not stand. If a house is divided against itself, that house cannot stand. Division. This is an insight into the enemy's method of operation. The enemy is so evil, he takes pleasure in destruction, in death, in killing, in yelling, in screaming, in murder. He takes pleasure in it. And as we see from Cain and from our own multiple experiences, we have a choice. We have free will. God will not make us do anything, and the devil cannot make us do anything either. So how does the enemy get a human being to kill another human being? Or get this human being to treat another human being like dirt and hopefully destroy them? To divide them. Rivalry. How do you divide and separate things? You have to emphasize a difference. This one is different from this one. And so you begin to label them. You make the categories. This one belongs to this one. That one belongs to that category. It might sound innocent and intellectual in the beginning, but that's how the devil can be. Then what comes next? Which one is better? Which one is superior? Which one is inferior? This is how the devil creates small skirmishes all the way to all-out wars. He begins by devaluing the other category and labels them as subhuman or less than ourselves. In a war, how can a person blow up other people who are just like their families at home unless they come to be convinced that they are not like me? They're different. That's a lie. In one sense, we're all different, but not in the sense that this is talking about. We are not intrinsically different because of something biological. But the enemy divides, devalues, and destroys. He's got to get this group devaluing this group. It needs to be based on something and its difference. He'll start with an obvious difference, but then work more lies into it that shows a deeper difference, that you are not the same. And where there's categories, you'll have division. But if we all came from Adam and Eve, we are all one people, Adam. Where did the idea of races come from? Well, in the earliest recordings of racism, is from the 3rd century Hun writings, which is modern-day China, where a particular group of people called the Wusun looked quite different from their neighbours because they had green eyes and red hair. And they were said to be barbarians who were descended from the macaque monkey because they looked like the macaque monkey. And this is the lie that race and races is based on. People evolved from animals. Some more involved than others. It wasn't until the 17th and 18th centuries and the advent of Darwinism that the idea of races really took off. Naturalists and scientists from Europe and America exploring the world observed people and studied skulls from different regions and concluded that white people, as they named them, were most evolved and that others different from themselves were subspecies that had either not evolved as much or had devolved. Along came the idea of races. And Joseph Comte de Gobineau in the 1800s said there were three races, white, black, and yellow. But Linnaeus and Moulton said there were 4 races. And then Johann Blumenbach said, no, there's 5 races. And then Charles Pickering said there's 11 races. And in 2010, in the American census, the people from America were given 15 races to choose from. So which one is right? In 1839, American craniologist Samuel Moulton conducted an experiment to measure the capacity of different skulls from different races. He emerged with a league table with the conclusion that races with the largest cranial capacity had the biggest brains. His top 3 were English, Native Americans, and then Black Americans. His inference was that it was that the English mind was larger, more powerful, and therefore superior. And according to Reginald Horseman in 1981, by the middle of the 19th century, the inherent inequality of races was simply accepted as a scientific fact in America. Some races were better than others. Some were cleverer, more evolved than others. By this time, some of the so-called experts of their time had created hierarchies within the white race, leading to titles such as Aryan, Slavic, and Celtic. Some of the strongest support for the idea of races and the superior race was demonstrated by Hitler and Nazi Germany. The Germanic people were considered by Nazi Germany to be the master race, the purest of the Aryan race. And blinded by that, they proceeded to try and wipe out other races. And it just so happens they picked on the Jewish people, God's chosen nation. Was that an accident? No. Was the enemy very clearly behind it? Yes. Race is a lie from the enemy. It's another way to divide and destroy. And evolution is a lie behind that lie. After the Second World War in 1950, UNESCO, a body of world-renowned scientists, got together to make a statement through the UN. In that statement, they said, there is no biological determinant for race. There is no biological determinant for race. It's made up, it's a social structure made up by man. But sadly, they were shouted down. People said they'd gone too far. You can't say that there's no basis for race. But how could Nazi Germany do what they did to Jewish people? How could you justify that kind of atrocity? By devaluing a group of people and dividing them from our own category. And if you believe enough lies, you believe that they are just barely descended or developed from an animal. They are an inferior race. The truth is that there are no races. There is no black and there's no white, red or yellow. There are categories that harken back to the day of Darwinism and Nazism. Categories to divide people into. This division is a step in the devil's mind towards destruction. If you can get you to believe that someone is substantially different from you, and then get you to believe that they are in some way inferior to try and get you to justify mistreating them. He's so subtle. The enemy wants you to fight racism while still categorizing people, because he knows that way you'll never get rid of it. To protest about racism while holding a sign saying Black Lives Matter is perpetuating the notion of race. It's crazy to fight racism with one hand and yet preach evolution with the other. The UNESCO scientists concluded that the idea of races was a social construct invented to divide people into different groups. So when we talk of people being black and white, we are helping to perpetuate a lie. These are categories fabricated by humans who have been deceived by the devil. You have probably felt more comfortable seeing placards saying, every life matters. That's because it's true. It's not based on a lie. However, every life matters slogans would then start to make the pro-abortionists uneasy, because they want to believe another lie that the enemy has fed to the world, that a baby is not a human being until it is born. Yet again, the enemy categorizing and devaluing in order to destroy life and gain influence. So he'll steer the world away from every life matters and get us focused once again on race. Maybe we should make a conscious effort to stop using those terms and just say a man, a woman. If we need to get more specific, we might say dark or lighter skinned or light skinned or darker skinned. But let's not put a person into a different category from ourselves. So to close, let's turn to Revelation 5. Revelation 5, verse 9. The four creatures and the 24 elders before the throne are singing to Jesus. And they sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, because you were slain. And with your blood, you purchased for God persons from every tribe." That means family descendants and language and people and nation. It doesn't mention anything about race. To God, there is no race. In God's eyes, there are no races on earth, only people from different families, languages, peoples, and places. No color categories, no one superior or inferior, just Adam, man and woman. And that's where my notes end this morning. So let's hand over to Mike. Bless you, Mike.